How's this?
That's better. I can hear you now.
All right. Skype was showing the right microphone, but I had to reset it.
Did you have to? Were you forced to update Skype recently?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very different. I mean, the interface is way different.
Yeah. I mean, it's cleaner, but I always have to reset the audio.
It's cleaner and simpler, but it always screws up the recorders.
Mm-hmm. What are you using to capture the audio?
MP3 recorder.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm doing just a backup on my end too, just in case. I've got a Malto call recorder going.
Cool deal. I was gonna ask you to do that just in case. That's what I usually do. I don't usually have problems, but
right, it's better to have.
Yeah, it's better to be safe than sorry.
Right. I agree.
Well, thanks for joining me.
Sure, absolutely.
I have never talked to you before other than on Twitter for the most part.
That's true. This is the next step.
Even if we have similar names, last names.
That's true.
They're spelled differently, but
close enough. It was inevitable.
Close enough. Yeah. So I wanted to get you on the show because and I'm speaking with Aaron Myers. Hardcore comic book collector, and he sells comics, and that's usually a facet that I don't usually talk to people about, because you have a unique situation where you sell comics to collect comics.
Oh yeah, it has to be a closed ecosystem for me. I don't really spend any family money on any of my collecting stuff.
And that's that's pretty amazing. Well, one of the amazing things is, you always seem to find really good deals. Like, I don't know if you buy in bulk and that's how your deal comes out, or if you just have good sellers you go to.
Maybe a mixture of both. It depends on the situation. We definitely have better stores, I think, in our area than most places. You know, I'm in Eugene, Oregon, and we've got, I'd say, 4 really good, like, full-time shops, and then probably another half dozen places that have some sort of comic option here and there. Yeah. And then there's a lot of collectors in the area too. And it's not a huge town. So it's kind of the nice mix of having a lot of comics options and a lot of collectors, but not a huge population. Like, you know, it's different than like the East Coast or something where you might have a ton of shops, but you also have just a much denser population. So that kind of, what makes
costs,
the prices,
yeah, higher than normal,
right?
Yeah.
So I'm definitely happy with the situation we have here. Plus, I'm 2 hours from Portland, and Portland's still a big city, but there's a lot of collectors there too. So there's some comic swaps that come up. Like, there's one that happens quarterly. I just never miss it because it's like an old school comic swap in an Eagles Lodge where there's dealers, but then you'll have still half a dozen people who it's like, all this stuff's just been taking up space in my, you know, in my garage. And somebody told me about this, so I just grabbed a table so I could get rid of it. You know, it's just that's where I live for. It's, you know, it's fun just to dig through those collections.
I would love that situation to have a comic swap.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's the kind of thing.
Well,
it's like it's a field of dreams,
trade.
Right?
Yeah, you trade too, right? I mean,
at the comic swap, I don't do a ton of trading online.
At the comic swap is what I was talking about.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I save up a ton of duplicates for that, but from collections I buy up or something and bring those there. But I'm mostly there just to go through other people's stuff and then just, you know, unload a bunch of things, hopefully, you know, cheap to someone else. So that's the best of those situations.
Yeah, yeah. You're lucky you don't have me in your town, though.
Well, it's funny because there's definitely probably 4 guys, maybe 2 guys for sure that do it full time for a living. Another maybe half dozen guys who do it.
And they
maybe
make
as
a living
supplement
off of that?
One of the guys does really well, yeah.
Are they retired or are they?
No.
This is their occupation.
yeah. But they do travel not outside of town too, so they're traveling everywhere, and then they go to conventions, you know, throughout the year. So, you know, they're traveling to all the big conventions, and they, you know, for them, their revenue model too is a lot of signatures and getting stuff graded and flipping them that way. So, I mean, there's a whole aspect, and it took me kind of years to, and I'm still learning, of all the ways to upsell and upvalue books that by themselves, you know, might be a dollar, but guys who do it for a living can turn a dollar book with the right signatures, the right grades, whatever, you know, into a $100 book.
Yeah, it seems like your ratio is really good, like what you purchase for, and then what you're able to sell it for, and you still sell at a reasonable cost. It's not like crazy expensive.
Yeah, but you have to pick and choose, because there's definitely there's tons of comics that I don't buy because it's either stuff I already have, so I don't need it again. And the only things I'll buy duplicates of are ones like, well, okay, this is $5, but it's a $20 book on eBay. I could sell it for $15 pretty easily, and that gives me another $10 to roll back into my collection.
But you also see to have a knack for knowing like when first appearances are going to happen too. Like usually when it happens.
Well, I mean, I don't know if there's any secret knowledge to that, because there's definitely like plenty of online speculator groups that kind of talk about things that people are kind of saving up for. You know, there's a bit of a gamble to it, because you can buy 100 books at $1, and it's almost like buying lottery tickets, right? You know, you buy 100 lottery tickets hoping that one's gonna pay off. I don't do that as much as I used to when I first started, when people were definitely scrambling a lot more for, oh, you know, the Lumberjack's going to be on Supergirl this year. So that book, you know, it was a dollar bin. Now people are paying 20 for it. Like, people got burnt out on that. And that market is definitely not as robust as it used to be.
Right. It was a quick flip type thing.
Yeah, I did that at times.
Forgotten. Yeah.
And it still happens, but it's definitely less than it used to be. Like when the superhero shows were much newer, people were paying huge prices for, you know, minor character appearances. And you just look at the market, and every time I would sell it, I'm like, you paid $20 for this. And, you know, you look and say, like, you can't even get $20 now for this actual major character appearance. You know, even take like this week, people were paying $50 to $100 for Thor God of Thunder number 6. And they might still be, but you know, I had two copies in my collection that I pulled out, that I put one up for $75 that sold in less than an hour. And then I put another one up later in the day and it sold for $50.
Right, and it's like, it's the Venom.
Venom God of Symbiotes, you know, thing. And I'm thinking, I'm like, is anyone going to care in 6 months? And they won't. You know, it'll be $10 because people won't want to drop it below that, but it's ridiculous. For $75, you could buy a first appearance of the Vision. You know, it's like, you know, the way people, the frenzy around stuff is
the short term. I was burned on one though recently. I usually buy just everything, so I don't ever have to worry about it. But and I like to read it all too. So, but. Right. I passed on the Spider-Gwen. Like,
oh, huh.
And I just...
You mean like Edge of Spider-Verse stuff?
I just decided not to get it for whatever reason. I go through these weird things where I try to cut back, but then it lasts about a week, and then I realize I want it. And then that one never seemed to go down as much as I thought, because I remember my retailer saying, well, you can buy it from me from $8. And I'm like, I don't want it for $8. It's going to lose its value soon.
Right.
And it never went below where I wanted it to be. So it,
I mean, there are definitely exceptions to everything. It's just, if you look at historically, for every 100 books that drop, you know, jump up above $25 within a year, 90 of those are going to be back down to $5.
Yeah. Well, I want to rewind. I want to rewind a little bit and talk to you about like what got you into comics and like when you started collecting.
Sure. It's sort of I'd say a two-stage story. So, like most people in the 80s and 90s, you know, I was a comics reader kid. I lived really rurally though, so like access to comics was fairly limited. It'd have to be when we went into town, I'd be able to pick up one or two.
Yeah.
So really, like, I had stuff as a kid, but it would be like a random issue of G.I. Joe I could get, or, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that I just happened to find, you know, at some grocery store or something like that. Even one of my early comics that I bought was an issue of Heavy Metal, because my mom didn't really look at it when I asked her if I could get it. And she just goes like, yeah, okay, fine. And like, that was one of those, I'd say, formative experiences as a young boy coming into puberty, when the contents of that were definitely not for kids.
But the interesting thing is, at least when I was a kid, I used to find that in the grocery store.
Heavy Metal?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, it was just on the magazine rack.
It wasn't like out of kids' reach. It was like at eye level.
Yeah, that's why I grabbed it. I just saw like there was a good-looking lady with a being attacked by a robot or kissing a robot. I forget. Something with a robot in the cover. I'm like, oh, this looks cool. And then I just, you know, I'm like, can I get this? Okay, fine.
I never tried to purchase it, though. But what I would do, there was a grocery store called Bag and Save.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think they exist anymore. But they used to have Heavy Metal there. And I used to always go to that section and just read Heavy Metal.
Uh-huh.
And
yeah.
While my parents were shopping, that's what I would do. It was Heavy Metal Day.
Absolutely.
I saw the film, and I was like, wow, I was amazed.
Yeah, definitely. That was definitely a formative thing. But then by the time I became like an early teenager and like first year of high school, there were a bunch of kids who were also into comics, and I could give them money and they would pick up comics for me for the store if I couldn't get out to them. So then I started being able to collect a lot, you know, a lot more in earnest. Like, he'd get me XYZ title, or they say, oh, you know, you should get this, it's really cool, and we'd be able to trade.
Right.
So, but that wasn't until high school. So up until before that, it was really kind of hit or miss what I could have access to or read. I definitely was the kid, like, that my parents are shopping and I would sit down and read whatever I could, you know, the time I had from the comics rack.
Yeah, that's...
So that's the early time, but, you know, by the time early 90s rolled around, it was a mix of comics, and I definitely started getting burnt out on that when collectible card games started getting popular. So when everyone started playing Magic the Gathering, a lot less people started playing.
That's what I heard from your podcast. I used to do comics therapy, and you talked about being in Magic the Gathering, and I think you... Weren't you selling your cards like several years ago?
Right, so that's later on. So I kept all my Magic cards. You know, I started playing not in the first set, not in alpha, but starting in beta. And I basically kept everything. I didn't get rid of it when I stopped playing. Mm. So I had that. And when I got back into comics, this is getting a little. We'll jump back in a little bit. But when I wanted to start collecting comics again, I sold my Magic collection, because I'd kept everything, and that was maybe 9 years ago, almost 9 years ago at this point, and I got close to $20,000 for them all.
Wow.
Which kind of was the seed money for my comic collection.
What drove you back to lose interest in one and go back into the other?
I stopped playing Magic in the late 90s. That was just more time and money, you know, like, I would gone off to college and didn't have the time for it, and had kind of lost the interest, but I never really wanted to get rid of anything, you know. Mm-hmm. Sort of probably the same as you. You don't really want to purge anything out that you don't already have a copy of. It's sort of, you know, the collector / hoarder mentality. Yeah. So I'm glad I did, but I mean, I also have bins full of baseball cards and sports cards from the 80s and 90s too that are worthless. You know, so it's not like it was some great foresight or anything like that. I just, any kind of artifact I have, you know, nostalgia for, so it's hard for me to part with, especially from childhood. But when I saw what the collection was worth, and I wanted to get back into collecting comics, it was a good excuse, because the problem with Magic too is it's such an addictive game for people with my kind of personality that I almost needed to. It's like an alcoholic with a bottle of bourbon in the cabinet. It's like, I just gotta get it out of here, otherwise I'm gonna be tempted to take it out again. And I don't have the money for two endeavors, and the time you need for magic, it's not a solitary thing. You know, you could sit down with a stack of comics yourself and read them, but it takes two or more to play a card game. And it's just a different interest.
Just out of curiosity, because this you're talking about one realm I've never delved in, and it's kind of like gaming. I've just never any kind D&D or magic. Is it an expensive hobby, or when you have your deck, is it something that you can use the same deck over and over again and still be competitive with?
I mean, that's a complex question, but the easy answer is no. You have to keep spending money, and people do. It's people. If you think people spend money on comic books, you should see what hardcore Magic card players spend money on. It's the sky's the limit too on that. Like, it's a very expensive hobby if you really want to be a serious player in all the different types of formats. I mean,
so would you say the richer you are, the better gamer you could be?
yeah, I guess in some aspects. That's the neat thing about it. I mean, I haven't played for so long, but it's definitely, I'm still aware of it, that you can play different formats and you don't need to be the one with the most money. Like, especially the guys who just casually, like on a Friday, do their Friday Night Magic. You pay a certain amount of money at the store. You get then, you know, a number of packs and a starter deck. So everyone kind of starts on an even playing field versus, you know, some of the other formats they have that are kind of what you can afford, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think a lot of stores that specialize in that know they're, like, they have comics.
Yeah.
They make their money in gaming and food during the gaming and stuff like that.
Oh, so, absolutely.
So it's like, I've seen some extravagant tables at some of these places, like, I guess Warhammer and a bunch of other stuff. These things are like huge tables that I've never seen them play, but I've seen the tables.
Well, yeah, the whole Warhammer minifigure thing is another thing. Like, there's only just so many hours in the day, like, to do all this stuff. You know, you kind of have to pick your poison at a certain point, but that's another thing that is super time-consuming and pretty pricey if you want to, you know, really get into it. I mean,
I guess I was trying to see if it was, like, closer to chess, like, where you're depending on your pieces, if you were just really good strategically, if you could beat somebody that has more.
I think, you know, early on it used to be that way when there weren't so many sets. I think now there's less of that, but I'm not the expert I used to be in it too. And I try not to think about it too much because it definitely triggers all those desires.
I mean, emotions.
it was a great escape, and it was at the comic book shop, so you had, you know, everyone sitting around playing card games, and you could still walk over and read the comics or pick up a couple too. But the whole market shifted when the comic industry really retracted, because it was just a bunch of stuff that just wasn't that interesting anymore. And card games were a new thing, and it was activating a whole new kind of, you know, pleasure center, I guess.
So what sparked, was there any particular event or something that happened that said, hey, I really like to get back into comics again?
Well, when my first son was born, the iPad kind of came out right around the same time. So I had bought an iPad, and with a newborn, you're kind of napping a lot and keeping rooms quiet and dark so the baby can sleep. And I just kind of looked up. I'm like, oh, what can I do with this iPad? Because it was brand new. And I'm like, I probably read some books on it, I guess. And I'm like, you know, I wonder what's going on with comics. So I just did like a Google of like best comics of, I think it was 2010, I guess it would have been. You know, early in 2010. And it was like Walking Dead was like top of the list. And I'm like, okay, well, what's The Walking Dead? And so I just downloaded a torrent of like 1 through 60 or whatever it was up to then. I think it was about the first 60 issues. And I put it on there because there was a comics reader application for it. Mm-hmm. And I just started reading it. And I'm like, holy crap, this is great. And I just kept working through the list. And it was like Fables and Why the Last Man and a few of those, you know, others on the list. I just started tearing through them. I'm like, these are amazing. Like comics have, you know, like I totally missed reading comics, and it was, you know, just going through it. So I think that's like the first week I started really reading through that. And Walking Dead, I just powered through. And so I went to the local comic shop, which I hadn't been in forever. And I just asked, hey, do you have any back issues of Walking Dead? And he's like, oh, yeah. And he just pulled it out. And he had like four through whatever was current.
Right.
And sold me, you know, everything, you know, one of each for cover price. Because it was before the TV show.
Right.
And
it was still getting a huge readership at that time, but...
It was, but people weren't scrambling for the back issues. Like, you know, there were still tons of back issues at the shop. Like, they were plenty.
Yeah.
I mean, really, at the time, I would, you know, if you had known anybody, you'd just say, I'll take all of these. In a couple of years, you know, these are all going to be worth a ton. But for me, it was great. It's like, all right, you know, $3 a piece. I can fill in all the back issues I wanted to own. You know, digital wasn't preferred. It was just a gateway back into comics.
Right, right.
And really, it was piracy that was back getting me back into comics.
And it got you into the physical medium. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, like, I started buying up all of that. Like, the biggest purchase I'd ever made was, like, I had all the issues except for number one. I found all the other issues in town. And we had, like, a little garage sale, and I sold off a bunch of... Oh, the other thing I had collected for years was vintage video games.
Oh,
and we
wow.
just had, we had a whole room full of vintage video game systems just in bins. And like, I'm just not ever going to hook these back up. I don't have room for them. They were hard to maintain.
What type of video games? Is it Nintendo or is it higher or what?
Oh, yeah. I had Coleco's. I had Sega, Odyssey's. I had, you know, Jaguar. I mean, you know, all the old systems I just collected through. For like 20 years, you know, when you could still buy it, you go to a Goodwill and there'd just be a stack of them. You know, it's
sure.
like, oh, you just pick something up and you kind of put it away and see if it works. And if it does, like, that's before anyone cared again, too. It was like in that mm-hmm. in-between time when people were just getting rid of that stuff.
Yeah.
So you just buy, you know, a stack of Nintendo cartridges and, you know, the ones that didn't work, you just toss out. But over the years, I just built up tons and tons of bins of those and... We didn't have room anymore with a new baby and other stuff to kind of store them all. And it's really hard to keep them working too. Like, you know, the transistors on them and the
yeah.
capacitors really just start to atrophy. Like, you got to maintain that stuff now.
Mm-hmm.
So I started selling all of those on Craigslist too. And I think I got about 10 grand for my collection, which I didn't, you know, that's another thing of the market for that stuff has exploded so much.
Bulk selling or just one at a time? Like
pretty much one at a time.
Okay.
Yeah. Like here and, you know, I'd put up like, here's the Nintendo cartridges. There's 400 of them for $2,000 and somebody would buy them and probably could have gotten even more of that than that now.
Yeah.
But it was definitely heating up then. So it was an okay time to sell them, but you know, things just kept going. I just didn't have the room because I was starting to collect comics too. But to go back to, so we had a garage sale.
It's funny how you're talking about room because I've seen your room.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an even bigger problem now. But that whole room, like that I have full of comics, used to be full of bins of video game systems and other stuff. You know, we'd had to shuffle some things around.
Yeah, statues,
because like,
you're a statue team. Guy, right?
You know, there's a lot of statues too, yeah. But so we did a garage sale, got rid of a bunch of stuff and I had a few $100s and I'm like, I really want to buy Walking Dead number one off eBay. There's a nice one for $250. And my wife's like, you're going to spend $250 on a comic book. And I'm like, yeah, I know it's a lot, but you know, it's the first one. It's such a great series. It's really what got me into this. Like, you know, we just sold a bunch of junk and you know, it's not gonna really cost us anything. She's like, fine, go ahead. But you know, in retrospect, that when I ended up selling my Walking Dead number one to pay for my trip to Emerald City a few years ago. You know, I got $2,000, $2,050 for it.
Did you get it graded or did you just...
I did get it graded.
Yeah,
it was
okay.
a 9.8, yeah.
Yeah.
But I bought it for $250.
$250, right.
Right. And then I spent $100 to get it.
So that at some point, you are willing to sell something that you would break your run... if it keeps you in the medium to do something else in the medium.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'd have preferred not to. And I don't think I would have done it now because I have more of an inventory and more of a have a better sales cycle. But, you know, at that time, it's like, well, this is going to cost me a couple thousand dollars to go to Emerald City. So this makes sense to sell this. And I still think I'll be able to buy it back one of these days. Once the show is over, I don't think the interest is going to be there the way it is.
Yeah, I just hear rumblings that it's getting harder for them to sell. Like, it's starting to depreciate a little bit. And I don't know if it's because viewers are getting frustrated with the show or... I'm still watching it. I watch both of them, but...
The viewership's definitely down on it. And you can see with... Besides, like, number one and a few of the others, the rest of them you can get fairly cheap now. Under $10 for early ones, and most of the others you can get about, you know, $5 a piece or something. Where it used to be, anything under issue 100 was selling for like $20 easily.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, issue one's a little different because it's such a small print run on that, and it is still an iconic series. I don't think it's ever going to really crash in price, but it's not going to be as high as it is now.
It's a remarkable story, though. Like, who would have thought... sorry about that. My wife just came home and my dog gets excited for about 2 minutes and then she calms down. Because it goes against the grain of something like the normal trends of comic books. So, like, it's just a really unique... Like, he struck gold. Like,
I
don't know how... Like, he's always encouraged people to do that thing, but to recreate his success is very rare.
Yeah.
The odds are against you.
Yeah, and it could have just as easily not worked out for him, you know. So I have mixed feelings about him, like, you know, telling creators you just got to take your chances, and if you believe in it, you know, it'll work out. It's like, I think he was right on the cusp of the comic industry starting to rebound.
Yeah.
And he definitely, it was a good time. Like, the market wasn't oversaturated with zombie stories. So it caught on, and it wasn't like it was wildfire. It's just, he had already kind of established a name for himself too with Marvel. Like, it wasn't like Kirkman was a brand new commodity, you know, like people knew him from Marvel Comics.
Well, that is a great, like a phenomenal zombie story. It's not reinventing what the zombie genre has been doing. Like,
no,
zombies are they're never part of the story. It's always about the people trying to survive and how awful people can be in a situation like that just to survive and keep their people alive.
Because
I've always been a George Romero fan, and the weirdest thing about Walking Dead is I didn't jump in on it. And I was a zombie fan. Like, I don't have Walking Dead number one.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's like, and it's really weird for me not to have gotten it.
But it was. I mean, 6,000 of them printed. Not every store even ordered it.
But I'm a pre-order guy. Like, I have been pre-ordering since I was in high school. Like, going through previews. Matter of fact, when I started, previews was two previews. One was Capital City and one was Diamond. So I'd take home both of those books and then pre-order. Mm-hmm. So
That's a weird one for you to miss, then.
For me to miss it is very rare, and I think it might have happened around the time I needed to save for a house or something, and I just didn't. I didn't go for it, but it's
you could probably see from the solicit that it's a little derivative or something. You go like, I don't need to.
Yeah. Plus, it was black and white, and I'm like, I have mixed feelings about black and white, personally. But I still buy black and white because there's some phenomenal stories in it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could also. I mean, in this one of these collections I bought this year, I'm just looking through because there's so much indie explosion stuff from like the late 80s, 90s. And as many good things that came out of that time, there is just so much derivative junk that is like, you know, not good. And it was cheaply made.
It's derivative junk, but I'm still interested in it.
You know, I mean, they're interesting to look through, but it's like how many, I mean, just from the stuff that was trying to cash in on the Turtles phenomena. I was just looking through. It's like so many gerbils and hamsters and turtles and penguins and, you know, all this stuff that is just trying to, like, get a little slice of what Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was getting, you know.
Radioactive hamsters or whatever
right.
they were.
Yeah, there's, I can, there's
that's the most popular
easily
one
25.
That I can,
yeah, I mean, even...
It was Usagi Yojimbo, too. I mean, that came around the same time, right?
That's around the same time, and I don't... That was definitely, like, he wasn't trying to cash in on that. That was really... That's, I would say, kind of even parallel, maybe, or that was a little different. Like, that whole... The whole anthropomorphic animal thing in that same time seemed to happen on a West Coast and an East Coast. I don't know if people were talking with each other, or maybe just, you know, it's one of those, like, well, this is the time for this to come around.
Yeah.
But, well, I mean, they crossed over, that's for sure. I mean,
well,
you have plenty of crossovers, too.
It happens all this in any kind of medium.
Right.
Word leaks from one studio to another, and, oh, we have a disaster volcano movie. Oh, well,
yeah,
we better come out with a disaster volcano movie.
Right, true.
Oh, we have an asteroid movie. Oh, we better do it.
Yeah.
And, like,
yep,
even now where you have the Justice League and Avengers, you have, like, celestial beings, a very similar type.
Right.
So you always
yeah.
wonder if somebody's playing golf and say, we got this idea.
Yeah. Well, with comics now, it's easy, like, oh, they got this in development. Okay. Well, what's the DC equivalent of that? Because there's parallels for everything. There's really not anything unique to either, you know, the Marvel universe or the DC universe.
Yeah. So do you still own some of your Walking Dead, or have you sold a lot of the earlier when they were peaking?
Yeah, I sold all. Once I sold number one, I didn't really want to keep the rest of it, because then I'd always be, like, bothered that I didn't have number one again.
Oh, yeah.
So I just bought the compendium so I'd have the story, you know, in physical print. And I really figured, like, I'm not in any rush. 15, 20 years down the road, somebody will have their collection that they're like, well, I really wanted to collect this when the show was on, and I don't care anymore. And I'll just buy it back from them.
Yeah. The offload thing.
It's already starting to happen, yeah.
Or, well, I'm real curious about, well, the collection that you just recently ran across, because that was pretty big. Did that come from a hardcore collector that passed was trying
to... He's still alive.
Okay, so he was just trying to, he like retired or something and said, I got to get rid of these in my storage unit kind of thing.
Kind of. It's a little more complicated than that. So the manager of one of the stores here, who had been manager for over 20 years, but he'd been going to that store since he was a kid. You know, he's been friends with the owners, and then he became a manager. And we've been talking. I've known him since I started getting back into comics. You know, he was the guy there who pulled out The Walking Dead for me when I walked in the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, I've known him for 8-9 years now. We talked even before. He said, oh, I'm going to retire when I'm 65. And I said, what are you going to do with your comic book collection? And it's like, well, it's just in my garage right now. So, yeah, maybe when I retire, we'll talk about it. And as his retirement got closer and closer, he gave me his number and said, well, after December 31st, give me a call. And I just kind of hung on to it. And then late in January, I think, I gave him a call and said, hey, I want to talk about your comic collection. He's like, come on over. And opened the garage and said, well, there it is. Start looking through it. Tell me what you think. And that was the impetus for it. It was the biggest collection I'd ever bought. I had to take out a loan.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, he knew exactly what he had and what it was worth. And essentially, you know, we kind of worked out that I'd pay him about half the market price for it.
Well, that's good.
You know,
is. Did you buy it in entirety, or did you pick and choose what you wanted?
No, I just took the whole thing.
Yeah. And then you probably looked at it and said, I can pay this off and X amount of months if I sell some of it that I have duplicated or that
exactly.
I don't want, right?
Yeah, even some of the stuff you bought for me, those are the duplicate runs. I've been going through, like, just finished bagging and boarding the Iron Man junk, so it's like now I've got a whole run of, you know, Iron Man that I'll sell off. So not only the duplicate keys, like I ended up keeping the better copy of the key for my collection, and then I some stuff I had to kind of calculate everything that it wasn't necessarily worth it if I kept it raw, but if I graded it, then it doubles the value. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you do that with, you know, 50 to 100 keys that helped pay for pay for the, you know, a big chunk of the collection. So yeah, it took about 2 months to pay it off.
Just out of
And
curiosity, was there like some hardcore discussions with your wife on this collection, or was
not
it,
anymore. She
yeah.
doesn't care. Like
Because she
I
already
mean,
knows you're gonna,
yeah.
it's you. She knows that you're gonna recoup whatever you spent.
Yeah,
Yeah.
she doesn't worry about that anymore.
Because
Like I told her, like,
it's not affecting your household. So, I mean, the
right.
initial loan might, but.
Not really, because I keep that all paying out of the same, you know, revenue that's coming in from comic sales and everything else. So, I mean, it's a credit check, but that's about it.
Do your kids read your comics, or are they not as
They
interested?
then I don't think they're as interested because it's so many of them are accessible. You know, it's
Yeah.
like when we were kids, it's like the novelty of being able to like go and get those comics. But if you have something so plentifully available, I don't think they just don't care as much. And it's a different thing. You know, they want to play on their phones and computers. Like
Digital
the younger of my
era,
sons,
yeah.
yeah, he's more interested in it, but still he's not. I don't try to force any of it onto them. It's all available, and they have boxes of comics of stuff that they like, but it's for,
Yeah.
you know, I like the Flash. Can I have a bunch of Flash comics? And here's a box of Flash comics for you.
Oh,
But it's not
cool.
stuff they're necessarily, you know, digging into to read.
Yeah, I'm always interested in like these collections. Like, there was a time at my comic shop where I got my Batman 4 and other stuff. It came from a really awesome collection. And I was always tempted to say, Barb, you know, I want to take out this loan for a couple grand. But I just never could do it. So I was getting things in piecemeal. And there's things that I regret not getting because I would have gotten a great deal on it.
Yeah, you can't do it all.
Well, it's expensive. Like
It is.
you start adding it all up, and it, and then one collection where I was getting a lot of books from turned out to be a stolen collection.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so like the police showed up at my comics, the store that I go to. I get most of my stuff through DCBS, but most of my DC at the comic store. And it turned out that the stepson was selling his father's collection unknowingly. Like he was being hospitalized and he was
Oh,
taking
wow.
it. And he got out of the hospital and his daughter found out and they had their stepson arrested. And
Wow.
yeah, it got ugly, but the comic shop owner thought something was weird, but these books were great because he was getting a good deal, and he just thought it was weird that this guy was bringing them in unboarded and unbagged and
Yeah.
it, kind of in like a knapsack.
Oh, wow. I mean, you know, you definitely have weird situations. So like something similar happened to me, and I never had anything like that happen before. It was a Craigslist posting for they had comics, you know, that were graded and ungraded. They said they were, you know, they were had been a dealer and had a shop, and they were selling some comics off. And I answered it and said, well, can you send me pictures of what you have? Send me a bunch of pictures. You know, kind of went back and forth. The guy said he was out of town, but his roommate was home. Like he was the one brokering them, and you know, he would tell him which ones we had agreed on, what price, and I could go meet him, you know, at this parking lot at a restaurant and pick him up. Craigslist, little sketchy, but
Yeah.
Craigslist can be sketchy anyway, and it wasn't like so sketchy that it would, and it wasn't like he was like giving them away. It was a good price, you know, but it wasn't like an
Yeah.
amazing price. So I bought one batch from him, and then you know, a couple weeks later, he said, you know, I'm gonna sell these off. You know, here's the stuff. You can meet him again and negotiate another price. And it was all good, and there was a mix of modern and some older stuff, and bought like four rounds of things for him over, you know, a few months. And it was always, I'm not in town, you know, I'm here, but just meet the roommate. You know, he'll you know, take care of it.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right. And I kind of always thought back, and like sometimes people like to pretend, you know, there's a roommate or something for whatever reason. I don't care. The comics were fine. Some of them were graded, some of them weren't. You know, I was happy with it. It wouldn't even feel like I was like making off with like somebody's stolen books.
Right.
You know, and then like a month, maybe, no, like a month and a half ago, I get like a message from him I hadn't heard from him in a month saying, "Hey, do you still have those books I sold you? I need them back." And I go like, and a lot of them, like, it was the same sort of thing. Like the majority of them, I wasn't even that interested in, or they were duplicates. It was just, it was a good enough deal for me to buy them and then resell them.
Yeah.
So most of them I didn't have anymore, but I don't know, like those, that was months ago. Like, what do you mean you need them back? It's like, you might get a call from a detective, but if you have any of those, it'd be really important that I get them back, like, as soon as possible. And I just stopped answering them.
I saw this story, like, on a tweet, but I didn't know that the cops got involved.
Yeah, so I got a call from, like, the Springfield police department detectives, and he asked me, like, "Hey, did you buy some comics from this guy? He was actually stealing them from his roommate, and the roommate didn't know for months," because I guess the guy who was stealing from has a massive comic book collection.
Yeah,
but he also had stolen like guns from him and tools and other stuff. I guess he had a bad gambling problem and was stealing a bunch of stuff from him, and the guy didn't really notice until months in,
right,
or, you know, half a year later. I'm like, "Yeah, I bought some stuff from him. Like, I don't have most of it. Most of those I resold. None of it seemed like it was I sent him all the screenshots I had left, and they weren't looking to get me in trouble. They just needed to recover whatever I had left." And I said, like, "Well, how do I get my money back for this?" He's like, "You could take them to small claims court, but frankly, you're out of it. Sorry. That's just what happened." So, I'd had like a dozen of them left, and I had to turn them back in.
Yeah, that's what happened to the shop owner, and he had to turn back in at least two long boxes.
Wow.
But not anything he sold. In other words, they said,
right,
"Whatever you have still, we'll take."
Yeah, that's essentially what I had to do too. It's like, as long as there wasn't any evidence, like, "Hey, you take these, I'll give you this, you know, and I'll fence them for you," or anything like that. You know,
he didn't take a loss because of what he made on what he did sell, but it still impacted, because he couldn't recoup the money other than file an insurance claim. You know,
right. Yeah, like, technically I could try to take this guy to small claims court, but he's not gonna have any money. I think he stole a lot of stuff from this guy.
That's not a good roommate, that's for sure.
not a good roommate. But, and it's I guess a cautionary tale. Like, it was never, he was good enough that it seemed weird, but it just seemed like Craigslist weird. And when, especially with comics people and comics sellers, I've never met one that isn't an interesting character. So it wasn't, there weren't enough red flags for me to go like, "Oh, no, you stole all these."
Yeah.
You know, it was, he was definitely adding some theater to it to make me believe like he was broke, you know, he was just the roommate who was, everything else was being brokered through through the guy.
Yeah.
So
interesting story.
Yeah. I mean, it could have been worse, but, still, it's, you know, I feel bad for the guy who got them stolen from him. I also, it's one of those, like, you know, you don't want to blame the victim, but it's like, it's one of those, like, oh man, it's one of those things that, like, how do you protect your collection too? Because it's so hard to, like, you can't keep track of them all.
And then there's been a lot of collections that come from people that pass, and then they have a storage locker, you know?
Yeah, that definitely happens a lot.
They never wanted to get rid of them, but
right,
they're no longer, and it's usually the spouse or whoever inherits them, or even sometimes the storage unit.
Yeah, well, there's definitely that. There's definitely guys that still buy, you know, are doing the blind buys of storage units and then putting stuff up. There was a guy who put up on, he was having a garage sale, and he said comics, and I was looking, and it was just a bunch of, he had boxes of comics and records and all this stuff. I'm like, "Did somebody pass away?" He's like, "I buy up storage units." And I'm like, "Oh, okay." He's like, "Yeah, so I find a bunch of this stuff, you know, every once in a while, throw away most of it and keep anything that's like collectible." I'm like, "Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I guess it still happens." So yeah, it's, I mean, there's plenty of comics out there. I've even, it was like a year and a half ago, there was one of those situations where it was an indoor, like, estate sale, but the whole house was just filled with comics, you know, long boxes of comics and toys. That the guy, and again, the story, the people running the estate sale said he had always planned to open a store, and, you know, this was everything he had bought up for inventory over the years. So there were a ton of people there to buy toys, and then there was just 80 long boxes, and they were only letting a certain amount of people inside the house at a time. And I only, had, you know, you only had a couple hours to go through them. It was awesome, but it was an interesting situation.
Did you find anything good out in that one?
Oh yeah, I walked away with like a long box of just keys, you know, for $1,000. Yeah.
Key Silver Age, or was it more bronze?
I mean, it was silver through modern. It's just like, yeah. I'd just be going through boxes when other guys were too, and just trying to pull out anything you could. It was weird because they didn't price anything, and they hired a guy who had some shop in the area. So it was like, I was trying to listen to how he was pricing stuff for other people as they were going up to him to see what he like thought was valuable and what he didn't.
Yeah.
To like, because some stuff I'd hear what he like, especially more modern books, he was just pricing like ridiculously. So I'd just leave them in the box because I didn't want to deal with it. Where other things, especially if it was a non, you know, if it wasn't like Spider-Man 300, but if it's something I know, this is a, you know, the $100 book. This is rare, but you know, if you're just dealing, if you really just focus on the big things, then you don't know, right?
Right.
So, like, I was trying to pull out all the stuff that I either wanted for myself or was really good resale books. They're just in a smaller interest market.
Right. And this all this stuff funds your Wednesday, the Wednesday Warrior stuff.
Yeah. So everything's paid for.
Yeah, on Twitter, you post all the books you buy on Wednesday, and that's all funded based on what you sell.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, last year I did my taxes. I sold like $95,000 in comics. But
that's a lot.
Yeah, but you know, there's half of that is cost, and then the other half was rolled back into buying comics, back into inventory. You know, I run it like a business now because it's just a zero profit business. But because there's so much buying and selling, it affects your taxes.
Yeah.
I never really even thought about it until I got a bill from the IRS one year for $15,000. And I'm like, oh my God, what's this for? And I, I contacted my accountant, and he's like, well, here's all your PayPal transactions. So we got to set this up as a, you know, personal business and work out all the numbers, you know, you write off all your mileage and expenses for bags and boards. And every time you drive to the store, you can write it off. You go on a trip, you stop at the store first, you can write the mileage off for it.
Yeah.
So, you know, every time I go to a comic book con, it's a write-off.
Do you buy stuff from cons, or is it mostly from the you do flea markets and?
Sure, yeah, flea market's great here. I mean, I always buy stuff at a comic con. It's just I don't buy stuff on the wall, the wall books typically, but yeah. I'll dig through long boxes as much as I can.
It's just that most stuff at a con. Yeah, it's high priced if it's a key. If it's
sure,
not,
but
you can find a lot of future things in a dollar box. But
I don't know. You'd be surprised. Like last Rose City Comic Con up in Portland, there was a guy. He just had bulk boxes, and and it was the first day was a dollar each. Then he changed it to 50 cents each. And I thought like by the second day, I'm like, there's gonna be nothing good in here.
Yeah.
And I think one of the tricks I've found, especially at conventions, is go through the stuff. Underneath the not on top, go through the boxes that are down on the ground.
On the ground, huh?
Because
that's an interesting strategy. I've never.
Well, that's
done
the
that.
Stuff that people don't want to sit on the ground and dig through a box. And when people are walking past you and you're getting kicked, like you gotta be willing to get down in the dirt if you want to find stuff. Because
right.
I got down in those boxes and I found almost a full run of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Image run.
Uh huh.
And I found, you know, multiple copies of the final issue. That's a $150 book in mint.
Yeah.
Because it's so rare. And it's like, nobody just had gone through those boxes because they're down on the ground. It's a traffic, you know, people are walking through. And it's like, the stuff on the top, the stuff you can just stand in front of and pick through, that's been gone through a million times.
Yeah.
It's the stuff that you got to look down below and say, well, here's stuff that's kind of hidden away or just nobody's getting to. Like, look at that stuff first, see if there's anything worth your time.
Do you track what you have? Like, do you know all the books you have?
Not as well as it should be. It's definitely gotten out of control. Key books, like big keys that I need to, like, you know, stuff that's over, say, a couple $100, I've got an inventory of.
Yeah.
But it's the runs, especially with getting this big collection, so much stuff has changed that I need to re-inventory, and that's just a big chunk of time too.
So do you ever merge your collection, or do you kind of like store them as you get them?
That's most of the time is what I've been doing. Is just stuff goes into a box and that box is full. It goes back, you know, in the stack, but it's real hard to find something if you're looking for it then.
Yeah. I've been trying I've been asking, and part of this show, what I try to do is I try to learn things.
Mm-hmm.
And I still haven't found a good answer for merging. And I talked to Bob Breetall, who has the Guinness Book of World Records.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And he's got a great mechanism because he just puts it as he reads it into a box and then puts it. He uses the same software I use, which is Comic Base, and then he knows what box it's in.
Yeah.
But it's I don't want my Teen Titans in a box that's with Spider-Man. It like freaks me out. So every now and then I've been doing these merges and I just hate it. Like it's fun for the first hour because you're like, oh crap, I got all this cool stuff.
Yeah.
And then you just get exhausted. It's like lifting box after box and then having three empty boxes so you can do merges. And it's just like,
yeah, what I'd really love to do is like, if I had like a warehouse where I could just lay long boxes out, then you can merge really easy. But
yeah,
I don't want to get to the point where I'm renting a storage unit to put stuff in it because I feel like that stuff I'll never ever look at again. I'll never even look through it to see if for stuff I want to sell, you know, and at a certain point, and I'm definitely at that point now, what really does upset me is like there's 64 long boxes in our living room right now.
Yeah, because I saw that.
Yeah, I don't have room for them in the comic room.
Well, I've been doing that, but my wife knows when I do it, I have to move them into the basement, and the basement's filling up. So I'm like, I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to be doing. I think I'm going to get a climate controlled storage unit, and I'm going to put my toys in there because that's a huge collection in itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I've stopped collecting the toys just to focus on comics. Every now and then I'll buy toys and I'll buy statues just because you look at it and say, damn, that's cool. I got to have it.
Of course, right. Yeah.
Well, I saw your Rocketeer one and I was jealous.
Yeah. I mean, that's another one of those. Like, I'm a huge Dave Stevens fan. So it's like I just had to have that.
Well, when I was in college, that's when I discovered Rocketeer. And I think I saw the movie, and to this day, it's still my favorite comic book movie, just because based on its simplicity and just being like a true hero, in my opinion, as somebody that just stumbles across something and coincidentally becomes a hero.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I just love it. Plus, it's in the time frame that's in my wheelhouse. So, yeah, it's an amazing story, and When I was collecting Rocketeer, I was fascinated that there was so little of it.
Yeah.
Like I bought it probably when it was at its peak because I just love the movie so much. And all I had was the Dark Horse stuff, which was like the Rocketeer Adventures. I didn't have like the Pacific and all the other obscure stuff because he really didn't have a lot. It's just such an interesting story in itself.
Yeah, well, Dave Stevens himself is just, you know, I mean, he died so young, too. I'm sure if he had lived, we'd have tons more Rocketeer. He would have gone back to it. But I think he just got so busy just doing cover work and commissions and other, you know, fine art things and then he got sick. You know, he just never got to go back
to
it too much.
Never got to go back to it, yeah.
Right.
That's a beautiful statue, by the way, though. That's great.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's just one of those, like, Like, I bought the Bowens, you know, I got kind of sucked into buying Bowens because they were available at the shop. Like, the shop owner was just bringing in, and he still has, like, a case full of them, you know. And it's, like, I just got sucked into, because they're just so cool. Like, the Bowens, they're just such great representations of the characters, but there hasn't been a ton that I've bought since then. A few of those Adam Hughes Sideshow ones, you know, but I definitely... They're displayed, but they're on a shelf inside the comic room because I have little kids. No way I could put a display case in the house. It's going to get smashed.
Right.
You know, it's not fair, too. Like, the long boxes in the living room can get climbed on and jumped off of, and they fare pretty okay. But, yeah. You know, you can't put anything that's going to be, that needs to be cared for.
So, supplies, do you just use the polypropylene bags and the backing boards, the standard, or...
Yeah, but anything say $20 or over, I buy my light 2 mils with full backs.
Yeah, I use halfbacks, but I buy it for everything. I buy them
Oh
by
yeah.
the thousands, yeah, from eGerber. Every
Yeah, that's pricey.
3 months I call the lady because they don't have a presence online where you can
Right.
just order. So
Right.
you have to call them during business hours, and I call her and wait for them to answer and place my order.
Yeah, I would love to defer everything. It's just so expensive. You end up spending thousands on supplies when like there's big keys that I want to buy too.
Yeah, it is a lot. The only thing I really like about it is you don't have that yellow tint after a while, and
Well, that and you don't have the bending. You
yeah,
don't just have
the
you don't get the
bending,
spine
right? It's,
curl.
you don't ha exactly.
Yeah.
So like I bag my crappy books that I bought for 50
Yeah.
cents or whatever in the same that I
Yeah.
know will never have any value. I mean, it might have like a quarter, but
Right. But
most I would say
the
like
mylight's worth
yeah.
50 cents. It's worth twice as much as the comic book.
I'd say 75% of what I buy is not going to increase in value because I buy a lot,
Oh, sure.
but I know that, and it doesn't bother me, you
But
know.
really, like as much as a collector as I am, I'm still a reader too, and like that's
Yeah.
the conceit. It's like it's insane to for us to spend even at a 50% discount to buy, a $2.50 comic, say, if you're ordering through DCBS or something like that, for a book that in terms of value is worth less than a dollar. You're paying that money to sustain the companies and to sustain the hobby and the medium you love.
That's what it is. And
And really, I
it's the
could I
entertainment
order
value.
I order all my Marvel through DCBS now because I was just falling behind on reading, and now I just read it as when it comes in once a month. But everything else, I still get through the local store because as much as I buy in back issues from there, I probably still for my main store, I think I spend, I'd say on average $2,000 to $3,000 a month there. But a lot of that's back issues, and still the sustainability for the store is the new comics.
Yeah, they get happy when you walk in.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I still
But
spend a lot at my local. Like I'm almost 80% DCBS, but I sure buy a lot of DC still at the shop.
yeah. And that's important. To have a good shop in your town or multiple shops is important for the
Well, I
medium to
like the owner, and the only reason I left was discounts, and then I was getting shafted in the back half of previews. So the way I moved to DCBS is I started to migrate. I started to say, well, I'm kind of missing my Valiant books or some of my Image books or some of the obscure stuff.
Were they just not ordering them for you
Cross-gen.
consistently?
Well, they weren't shelving them, and then he'd forget to order the one copy or something like that, or
Oh,
it'd come
okay.
in damaged. The one copy would come in, and
Yeah.
I just started migrating it over. And well, he knew what I was doing because people at the store ask me questions all the time, and they're like, "Well, how do you know so much about Marvel? You don't buy any of it." It's like, well, I buy the bundles over at
Right.
DCBS.
Yeah, I don't think my stores they have a pretty good management software. So it's like I don't even have to give him the code. I just give him the list and he orders them for me, and I can send an email and they'll drop titles or add titles for me. So I'd say 95% of the time what I've ordered is what's in my box waiting for me, so which is really nice. Yeah, it's just I want the stores to be around for a multitude of reasons.
Yeah, same here. Matter of fact, it's weird here, and I'm in Colorado Springs, but I find it really bizarre because the market, I don't know, it doesn't seem to be exploding in my opinion, but there's more shops here than there have ever been.
Oh,
Like,
interesting, huh?
yeah, there's like seven shops, and usually there was like three. So
Wow.
it's like really boomed.
I mean, alternative stuff too is still really sustainable, and that's how shops survived in the 90s too. Late 90s, early 2000s, it was the card games. So as long as a shop diversifies in isn't just trying to focus on, you know, variants and hot books and that sort of thing. You know, it's a sustainable model. You just can't, you have to be a collectible shop. You can't just be a comic book shop for the most part.
And I go to one other shop, which is specializes more in gaming. But I go there to get the drawer boxes because it's the only store that contains the drawer boxes. And he always finds it weird because I don't buy anything from him but the drawer boxes. So I'll come in there and I'll buy like 25 short drawer boxes at a time. And what I do is I take those 25 to my storage unit, and then I'll bring like four with me every time, you know. And then when I run low, I'll restock it, and I go back to the store and buy 25 short. But I'm getting older. I think I'm several years older than you. And I found
I'm going to be 40 this year.
Well, I'm going to be 50 soon. So I still got a little bit of time, but I got a year, about a year and a couple months. But I found I'm having harder time lifting the long boxes.
Yeah, especially if you're going to have to do a bunch of them. It's a good workout.
Well, there was one time where I gave myself an umbilical hernia.
Oh, wow.
So I had a medical, and it was because my basement was flooding.
And boy.
I carried, I don't know, like 50 long boxes up a flight of stairs, and just a matter of no time because you're running on adrenaline.
Of course, right. And,
and little did I know that my belly button was popped out.
Wow. Now, that hasn't happened to me yet, but I mean, moving long boxes around, definitely, if you learn to bend, you know, use your knees. Don't use your middle. I'd much rather have everything in short boxes, but that takes up even more space. And
it takes up more space. It costs more.
The hardest thing.
Less, but
the hardest thing for me is, it's the same thing we go back to. It's like, I love, you know, so many just weird things that I'll never end up looking at again, but it's hard for me to get rid of them.
Yeah.
You know, I just feel like if I got rid of it, I'll end up buying it again at some point, and that's just a waste. But I can't hang on to it all at this point too. Like, I really should purge out at least 60 long boxes of stuff that I just will never look at again.
Yeah, I'm gonna
and have no value really.
If you can, after this episode, what I usually do is I ask who I'm recording with to send me a picture of something, like either if it's your room that you can do, or if it's a certain book you want or whatever, if you could send me a picture so I could put it with the show notes and such.
Yeah, I'll send you some pictures, yeah.
Yeah.
Of the stuff that's piling up. But I've definitely, with these this year, because I bought more bulk collections than I really have in the past, like, the one big collection that I negotiated for was 44 long boxes, but none of it was bagged and boarded either. So really, that's more like 80 long boxes once you bag and board it.
Yeah.
And I got rid of a bunch of that. Like, I just made myself, like, especially the 80s, like mid-80s to 90s stuff of indie books that I'll just never get look at, you know, really, and just have no real interest to me again.
How do you get rid of that in bulk? Like a blind box, or is it a...
I get rid of like 18 long boxes at I just put it out 4 for a dollar, you know, in there. If you want a bunch, I'll make you a deal. And at a certain point, I had to leave during the day. So I just, another collector guy in town, said, you want to buy this from me, or you want to trade for it? He's like, yeah, what do you want for a ball? You know, I knew he'd make plenty of money off of them. I just needed to walk away from them. So I was able to purge out almost 20 boxes there, and another comic shop, you know, another comic swap. I got rid of another 10. So it's the kind of thing. It's like, there's probably, I just was so out of room that I just had to make some space, that there's probably a few things out of there I would have wanted to keep, but does it matter? Probably not, you know?
Yeah. It's weird. I find peace in mass collecting, but my engineering brain says,
right,
maybe you should get rid of some of this stuff,
right,
or focus it, because
I want to do, right, is, especially now that I have some pretty good complete runs, is really like, okay, Bronze Age Marvel, like, that's what I want to focus on. You know, I have a pretty good start with a lot of that. Or sink your money into the Spider-Man issues that you're missing, because, you know, Amazing Spider-Man early ones, I've got pretty decent chunk of 1 through 100, but I don't have number one. You know, I don't have the big keys that are going to cost probably $10,000, you know, to put them all together. You know, and that's a big grind to
Well,
chip
I
away.
saw you got one of the books that I want
Which
recently,
one?
which is the Punisher issue for Spider-Man.
Oh, 129.
129, yeah.
Yep, I actually have three copies of that now.
Yeah.
But
that's
two
one
of them.
I've been looking at. Like I want to pull the trigger on. I just haven't yet.
It's hard. It's exploded so much, but it's books like that if I can buy, that's the only way you can really pull that margin is if I can buy it for $300 or less. I just bought one that's pretty low grade for $125 this week, but it'll be $500 when I'm done grading it.
Yeah.
And you know, you do that over the course of a year, 20 times, that's enough money to buy a big key that I'll just never find in the wild. So it's, you know, it's slow going, but that's part of the fun of the collecting aspect of it, is kind of chipping away at that stuff.
That's the fun stuff.
Yeah. It's just, I don't ever want it to be where it's like, okay, I'm going to take this risk and maybe we won't be able to pay the mortgage this month. You know, it's all got to kind of take care of itself.
Yeah. Well, you seem to have it down to a science though. Like you know, I always told my wife, I said, if I could hire Aaron to find me the best deals, I would just go through it. Like, I would just have you as my broker and just go get me these deals.
Well, that's the problem with it is because, you know, everyone there's, it's a sharks in the water, right? You know, nobody really wants to hunt for other people for their books because it's stuff you want for yourself. And the guys who do it for a living get really cutthroat about it. You know, I'm glad I don't have to do it to actually make any ends meet because that would take away the fun. Like when you actually have stakes.
Well, the thing that's great about what you do too is like you read your stuff. So it's like you're well read in current stuff and past stuff. So
yeah, but I buy up so much stuff. You know, people ask me like, "How do you read all of these?" And the answer is I don't. Like I'll read stuff, but some stuff when you're sorting through, like. It takes so long to sort things because I'll be like digging through a box and then it's like, oh, wait, this is interesting. I want to read this. You know, so it's like you get distracted.
Yeah, comic reading takes time and so does the inventorying. Sunday is like my maintenance day.
Right.
So like I'll go merge or I'll scan books into my database so they're...
Yeah.
That's the one thing that's a saving grace for me is... Like I get a lot from DCBS, so when I do get a shipment, I can put them right next to my computer, and I have my barcode scanner, and I just go bloop, 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 and I get them all in, and then I bag and board them.
That's good. You just have to be consistent with it, which for me, like I just got so far behind on that. It's like I don't feel I'll ever pull my head out of the water, and then you know, I keep telling myself, well, once I've purged out all the stuff to get things back to a normal amount, but you still, the other side of it to have is like, someday I want to be the weirdo guy who's like, look, this is Aaron Myers. He has 500,000 unique comic books in his collection. You can't have it both ways.
Yeah.
It's like, I want like my comic room to turn into like a infinite bag of holding somehow. And, you know, just have unlimited space. But there's a reality to it.
Yeah. I would never go after the Guinness Book World Records because I know the process. And I would never want to do what he did.
No. It's an amazing feat, but
It is an amazing feat.
But it's weird, like especially with collectors or Twitter or Instagram, people will like ask like how many comics you have, and it is there's an odd sense of pride to be able to go like, oh, I got about 50,000 comics or something like that, you know. And it shouldn't really matter. It should be like, I've got 10,000 really good comics that I really like, you know, that should be and be content with that.
And this show here, I don't focus on size. I focus on passion. Like, if you have 100 comics, like Amazing Spider-Man 1 through 100, I want to talk to you. Or even if it's contemporary stuff, I don't care. As long as you have that mentality and passion for, I've even talked to people that collect comics on Comixology.
Yeah.
So like do digital.
Yeah.
I've tried that.
Space,
I that's the way to go in my eyes, but I don't get as much enjoyment out of digital media.
I
don't know if
I
it's because
I
look at
I
a computer
have...
all the time that turns me off a little bit. Like I'll actually grade a book, like I'll say, oh man, this was fantastic, but it was a 4 out of 5. But then I'll read it in paper, and it's like something just kicks off in my brain, and it's even better.
There's the convenience of digital, but I think there's definitely something in me that needs to have the medium too, otherwise it's not wasn't real.
Yeah.
Even though that it's a logical fallacy, it's just part of the mentality.
Yeah, that's the collecting mentality.
It is. It's the other aspect of
you,
it.
You physically have something, than whether it being on the cloud. Even though right. you still have it, you purchased it, and you can right. access it anywhere.
Right, right.
Yeah.
It is far more convenient and accessible to you, but it's just not the same as having the artifact.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I want to thank you for joining me, and I hope everything's going good, and I was glad that I was able to get you on the show, because I really wanted to talk to you, because I've never talked to anybody. I know a few people that buy and then sell to keep their comic collection, but not at the extreme that you do, because you finance your hobby by selling your hobby. So I find that fascinating.
Yeah, it's the only practical way. I mean, I'd love to have kept everything I've ever purchased and somehow magically be able to purchase more, but there's a practicality to it.
Yeah, and I hear where you're coming from. Like, it's nice to know that Walking Dead brought you in, and mm-hmm. you did achieve that number one, but you're
I feel like I'll get another one of these days too.
Yeah, that's what I think. If I do get it, it will be like when people stop to care about it, and maybe it'll depreciate. I don't think it'll ever depreciate to where I want to pay for it, but I think it'll depreciate to a cost I'm willing to spend.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
Yep. And for guys like us who, after the hype and after the media is done, that still want to have it for the story.
Yeah. Do you want to plug your eBay store and your Facebook page? Because that's how I actually bought some comics, and Aaron packages them really, really well. And I got a full run of Warlock from him, mm-hmm. and Invaders, and I bought some other stuff, like some FF and Avengers from him. So
best everything goes up on my Facebook page first. So it's facebook.com/AM Comic Sales, so Aaron Myers Comic Sales. So that's the best place, you know, because I can price it a little cheaper. I don't have to pay the eBay fees, which adds another like 10% to it. And then after it's been up on Facebook for a while, then I'll usually get it listed on eBay too, which is my eBay username is Grok, GROKPNW, like Pacific Northwest.
And one other thing I want to ask you as a last question. Can you tell me your fascination with ROM, like how that started?
It was definitely one of the early comics I had, you know, one of the few randoms that I was able to get as a kid. And then, you know, beyond that, it's funny. It just kind of became, it was an avatar I picked when I started Twitter. And, you know, putting together the run of that was like one of the first things I actually completed. And then somehow I also just like, people just were calling me the ROM guy just because I had ROM as an avatar. And people weren't really, there were just very few people that were actually like on Twitter that actually cared about the character at all. And I was like, I did. And, you know, and then it became fun to, like, any number one I came across, I'd buy, you know, just keep in the collection and put together a bound set and a regular set, you know, and keep have another full run. So it just became sort of a thing out of that I guess you embrace, right? And becomes
right.
Do you
actually have a ROM Space Knight toy?
Oh, yeah, I have three of them.
Ah, that's cool.
Yeah, and you used to be able to buy them. They weren't cheap, but you used to be able to buy. I bought one off eBay, you know, a long time ago for $25 mm-hmm. and, you know, $50. Like, they weren't crazy expensive, but because of TV and movie stuff, like, maybe I had something a little bit to do with it, too, like awareness. Like, more and more people do want to buy the older ones. And like, now people want $15 to $30 for number one, where you used to be able to buy it for $5.
Yeah.
So I also make it a rule of mine, like any number one I come across that's under $10, I buy just to have.
Just to have, yeah.
Yeah.
And if it's ROM, you can't leave it in the box.
Absolutely, right.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just, you know, everyone has to have their weird quirk. I guess it's ROM's mine. But, you know, finding the original art, I wish I'd bought more original art early on, because now pages are very expensive.
Yeah. I haven't gotten into that yet, thank God.
That's a that's a
I have
that's
a couple of pages,
astronomical
but they're just
hobby.
yeah, it's just I do get commissions though, so
Yeah,
and that's kind of expensive in itself.
that's the baby step into it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
All right, take
Appreciate
care.
It. Bye.
Bye. I want to thank Aaron for joining us on Mike M's Collector's Corner. And if you need to reach me, I am at Mike Myers Brunch on Twitter. I am at geekbrunchpodcast.com on the website. On Facebook, you can go to Geek Brunch Podcast with spaces in between and click the like button and follow the episode threads there. And email me at mike@comicbooknoise.com if you have any comments on Mike M's weekly reads or Mike M's Collector's Corner or Geek Brunch or Geek Brunch Retro. And we will talk to you later. Bye-bye.